Jesus Christ, these are very, very...
You have an intro that's so prepared.
Compared to the other ones. Oh, man, it's weird. This, the paper in the office is like, that's not really white. It's almost cream. Like, it's very weird. Okay, hello. I'm going to have to be so careful with this mic compared to my other one. I can scream into my other mic. It's no problem. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Pear Pod. Thank you all for listening. Thank you for supporting the last episode. Welcome to season 6, episode 2. And today we are joined by the founder of Fearless Media, Thomas Arnold. Thomas, how are you, sir?
I'm very well, Sam. How are you? Thank you for the invite.
My pleasure. My pleasure. We're here on a Saturday morning down in the Digital Depot. And originally I'd said to you, I didn't want to tell you beforehand, but the inspiration for everyone getting this great podcast now is because I watched you film a podcast, 5 years ago, maybe, in Jake Brown's office. And I remember the whole setup of that being like, this is magical. I don't know what it was. It was something about just guys independently putting stuff out that I was like, this is so sick. So the audience can thank you for this, I guess, earth-shattering podcast that we've started the last 2 years. So everything has come from Thomas. Would you be able to introduce Freelance Media or Fearless Media a little bit just for the audience?
Freelance Media, 100%. Yeah, that's my other business. I can help with that too, yeah. Also, sorry, as a side note, are these recording into... So if I laugh too loudly here, are these recorded into two separate inputs?
Yeah, yeah.
So like you can bring it down.
I can turn you down.
Okay, cool. I've had that.
It actually merges into one and then also gives you the separate ones as well.
Oh, sick.
Very fun.
Okay, that's cool, man. Yeah. My name's Thomas. Anyway, nice to meet everyone digitally.
That's right. 65 people listening.
Hello, 65 people.
Yes,
Fearless Media is my video production company. It sort of started, I did commerce in UCD. In 2016, and when I went into first year, I was working in a garden center, like part-time, making like 200-300 quid a week, and I didn't really like doing it. It was sort of boring. I was constantly like out the back, sort of on my phone and stuff, and I had like a creative itch in me that I wanted to scratch, and I basically took probably 4 or 5 weeks worth of wages and bought my first camera, which was like a Canon 6D, and when I went into UCD, I was like, okay, what's a way I could try and make a bit of money here? And UCD is sort of unique in that it has quite a few buildings. Yeah. And I walked around to, I basically went into all of them, and like you can walk up to the marketing manager in each of the schools, like the School of Law, the School of Business, et cetera. Mm. And the first guy who gave me my like first ever gig was a guy called Adam Baker. He's now moved on to Board B. I'm still in touch with him. And I just went up to him and said like, look, I make these videos. I had a couple of sample ones I had done for like a local coffee shop. And
it's always a coffee shop, isn't it?
For some reason.
Let me make the most ridiculous latte edit. No, you won't even believe it.
It's always like a coffee shop. And this is like every freelancer's journey. Coffee shop, a gym.
Yeah, gym's big.
Or some form of like event or like a college ball or something.
Yeah, awards nights are great. Would you come in and just shoot some of the awards? You're like, yeah, no bother.
They're like, do you do pictures as well? You're like, well, my photo takes, yeah. Or my camera takes photos.
Do I have the ability to? Yes. It's better to just be like, better to just say yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
That's what we've learned.
And so basically Adam was like, I can give you a one for all voucher, but I can't pay you. So I got these one for all vouchers. I cashed them in with my mom. She spent them somewhere and she gave me some money. And that's sort of how I started freelancing. And when I started doing it, when I was making that first little bit of money, it was amazing that I was doing something for myself and that I didn't need to work like a part-time job. And I was doing something that I liked doing because I'd been making videos since I was like 12 or 13, like little YouTube videos at home. So basically, when that was picking up a bit of momentum, I was just getting the odd gig here or there. I was like, this would be amazing if by the time I finish commerce in UCD, I don't need to take up a grad role. I can have my own like income stream. That was the goal. Basically, I was like, let's just try and make 30 grand a year. Basically.
And was it the long-term play or was commerce and like a more business-focused job after college the plan? And this was just your way to kind of supplement your income in the meantime, you know?
Yeah, like... To be honest, so before commerce, I did genetics in DCU for 3 months, and it was a science heavy course. I basically didn't like it and I dropped out. And the only reason I reapplied to college was because my mom and dad wanted me to go back, particularly my dad. And I was like, you know, I had a certain amount of points, which whatever, it was like maybe 505 or something. So I had...
Fuck off.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, fair play. Yeah,
or maybe,
yeah, I can see him wanting you to use that. Yeah. So, it's harder for my mom. She's like, okay, come on, 360 is great. Is jam making? Like, mom, please.
I actually think they've gotten rid of jam making. That was like...
That's a fucking disgrace.
It is a disgrace, bro.
I was just there, mom, I want to dance. She's like, no, no dancing. No, continue.
And so, like, my dad found it. It was, first of all, my mom had to go to like night college. She couldn't even get into normal college. She, like, they didn't have enough money to go to normal college. And my dad, it was like such a big deal for him to get in. So they put a big emphasis on education in the house. And I didn't want to disappoint them, but I also didn't want to pick a course that was as heavy as like engineering or science, because it required, it was sort of like a full-time job and I didn't really like it that much.
Yeah.
So commerce is one of those degrees where if you want to just get by, you can get by. If you want to excel, you can excel, but it was easy enough for me to not have to spend a huge amount of time there. I was still learning things and I felt like it was related to like filmmaking, sort of business of filmmaking kind of thing.
Is it fair to say you just did that for your parents?
Yeah, I think so. Like, okay. If mom and dad are listening to this, I think that's fair enough. Yeah.
And I think obviously you, that your UCD vlogs kind of propelled you into what you're kind of doing now. Like, it was the start of your journey. So it's interesting to see what would have happened if you'd just been like, I'm just going to go and do freelance videography and, you know, take a year out of college. And I guess you made the most of it either way and like grew something out of it either way. So it's just funny how things work. I was in a similar position, but my when I first went to college, I just went because everyone was going. You know what I mean? I did, health and facilities, man, something crazy. And in DIT and had one great year and then was like, this, I can't do this, and thought I was a loser. And, you know, all your mates are going to be architects or whatever. And you're like, Jesus, I'm not going to fit into anything. And then did the media course in Tala, which hadn't been pushed by my, basically DIT, or Tala hadn't been told to me by my, what's the word? Like your...
Like careers guidance.
Yeah, there was none of that. It was UCD, DIT, and then maybe DCU were the ones, and they didn't do big media courses unless you want to do like radio broadcasting. So it was just in that point, you think it's the biggest thing in the world. But and when you first went into, like, are you still looking at, even for commerce, like how long was it until you were like, Jesus, Fearless could grow into something like this is kicking on? Because I know you vlogged for a long time. Was that your, did you have clients on the side with that as well as pushing the daily vlogs?
Yeah, so in terms of the, I made around 250 videos over the course of college, but my first year was where I made like 100. So it was something, or maybe like 150. It was something like 50 weeks and I did 3 a week and I never missed an upload. But that was when I had the smallest amount of freelance gigs. And because I had seen what first year was like in DCU, I was like, I don't really need to do a lot here in first year of commerce and I'll be fine. And also I was sort of just, like, I've never had crazy long-term plans, but I was just thinking, I'm not going to be an accountant. I don't want to like win the academic game, because I didn't really feel like there was a lot of rewards. Like, if you get a 1-1 in your degree, the best that you're going to do is go off and do an internship maybe. And like,
you might get an opportunity to do one of the better ones.
Yeah. I mean?
But that's about where it ends.
But you still want to go into employment, and I didn't want to do that, you know? So, and ultimately I'm a bit of a feel-based kind of person as well. And the videos were like really fun to make. Mm. So I sort of did like 100 in first year. And then off the back of that, unintentionally, I was getting more inquiries about freelance work. So second year of college, I probably had twice the amount that I had in first year. And I made a YouTube video on this, but it was something like the first year was 8K or something. The second year was like 17. Third year, I was doing an internship, which luckily was paid. So between that and the other income, that sort of doubled again. And then in my final year, it was around like 30 or 35, sort of purely off freelance. So I had like enough coming off that I didn't need to do a grad role.
Yeah.
And
it gave you a little bit of time. A little bit of a cushion, maybe.
Yeah. And that's sort of what I, you know, I still get people text me on Instagram, because all those UCD videos are still there. Like, and there's students being like, oh, do I want to do my course or whatever? And it's interesting why they'd even ask you, because I wouldn't even say that I have like a successful business, but I think they just look at the vlogs.
Would you not say that?
Like, I don't think I'm a, you know, big enough success story for someone to, that's basically what I say is like, I'm just talking about my own lived experience. Yeah, yeah. For me, I did know going into college, I have 4 years here to make something happen. So there's no pressure on me. And like, I even have friends who they need to make money now for whatever reason, like they're renting or whatever. And if you have to think about something really short term and you're giving yourself a really short timeline to make something happen, your behaviors start to change. You don't do things for the long term. You might like cut corners unintentionally, etc. And I've always felt like the longer I can play this out, the better. So for example, with the YouTube channel, I never gave a monkey's about monetizing it because number one, I was doing it for fun. And number two, I didn't need the money. I was making money freelance and I was living at home. So like, even if I only made 150 euro a week, that was more than enough to pay for like buses in and out. I wasn't driving. And as a result of that, it allowed the business to sort of grow like naturally. Yeah. So it was never like a long-term play, but it was always like a long-term dream, you know? And as a bit like you were saying about the podcast, how when you have a lot of freelance gigs, you don't have as much time to do these episodes. As the years were going on, I was making less YouTube videos because I had less time because I was doing more freelance work. So there was almost like this, you know, the scales had changed from first year was loads of YouTube videos, very little freelance work, like probably a gig once a month or something.
Yeah.
To like by the time college was finished, I was finding it very difficult to even go into classes because we were probably on shoots like 3 days a week at least. So it had completely sort of flipped. And like basically the videography had become a job, you know?
Yeah. And I know we'll talk about this more, but I watched you bringing out or brought out a documentary called Cornered, which kind of followed your white collar boxing and MMA journey. But in that, which was very interesting, I only watched it yesterday, you talked about kind of falling out of love with videography. Number one, was that kind of falling out of love with the process of making videos and like, you know, showing up to three shoots a week for so long? Or is it like content overall, or have you found yourself in Fearless kind of transitioning into a sales, like overall, like strategic planning and letting the day-to-day videoing be done by a freelancer or whatever?
Yeah, I think the falling out of love thing for me was like, I really, really like making content. But when I left college, like it was pretty clear for me in UCD that I was making videos about the college experience, and that made sense. It was like, this is a college student making videos about college. But when I left college and obviously did the TikTok house for a bit, and then I came home, which was like summer of 2021, I was like, now I'm just a 24-year-old with a business, which is essentially like everyone, you know, like there's so many people like that. There was nothing unique about me anymore.
You lost that kind of what you thought was like your unique edge, I guess.
Yeah. And I was like, now I'm just sort of guy with like a quirky sense of humor who hasn't built a big business yet, who like essentially it was just me with a few subcontractors doing a bunch of video work around the city. And I just felt like, and it's probably only the past, honestly, 5 or 6 weeks that I felt as if I'm probably in a place again now where I'm happy to start putting stuff out again with a very different kind of story, you know?
Mm. What kind of content is that? Or are you thinking about?
Like now?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I can just start documenting stuff again, you know?
You speak about, you know, not having the big business now. Like you watch Casey, for example, like it's very easy to be engaged with Casey because he's already achieved so much on the business side and now he's kind of documenting that. But there is a part of me that kind of wishes he documented the 4 years before he started vlogging. As it's growing, I almost find that more interesting, the kind of grind period versus the, we just go into Casey's office, there's 20 people editing and he goes, yeah, this is Beam. And then he goes upstairs and he's already kind of done it all. And I almost find your journey, or almost anyone I watch now who's on the growing side, like more endearing. Like even I talk about Glenn Gillan a lot as a creator. I love his content, and like mainly because I know him in his room, in his bunk bed. And now I know him now. Sponsored by Alpha Lead, has his own apartment, all that stuff. So that is what's endearing to me. So the journey is kind of what makes it cool for me. Yeah. So I'd love you to keep doing that.
Yeah. And like a lot of the people who I'd resonate with online, there's a guy called Marcus Million who has a clothing company called Minted in New York. It's very cool, isn't it? And they're sort of documenting that in New York. And I think I find interesting when I look at, say, other creators and I ask myself like, oh, why do I enjoy their content? And that guy in particular, you might say like, oh, he's in New York, so obviously it's going to be interesting.
Cool backdrop. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like filming a video on Venice Beach versus like South Beach and Rush, you know, it's a bit different.
Greystones.
Yeah. Or like Dollyman Strand or something. You know, I think, for example, with him, I think there's probably a few reasons why it's interesting. One, so the backdrop of all his videos is basically running. He's really into running. And the genesis of the brand was around creating clothes that are helpful for runners. So they're making shoes, they're making tees. They're based in New York. The lads like look aesthetically pretty cool. And they seem like pretty authentic, you know? So I think the flip side of like me being confused about what to make basically is that if I can figure out something that I like doing, then I think it probably opens up the like people in Dublin anyway, or people in Ireland, or people in my direct circle to be like, oh, maybe I could start doing something. Or like, so that to me has always been like the thing that I'd like to achieve in my life is that I just help as many people as I can. And the easiest way to help people is your immediate circle see you doing something and they take, you know, energy and motivation from that. Yeah. And they take inspiration from it. So I think if I can get back doing content again, even if, man, it helps, you know, 50 people, that's like way better than just
help me.
There you know what
I
mean?
So if that's going to inspire you for the next year, like I wouldn't be doing this. Most likely I wouldn't be doing this if I hadn't done that podcast with you guys. So that's
Let's
fucking
go,
sick.
Brother.
You're welcome, everyone.
Who wants it, brother?
Going a little bit more onto your business side. Sorry, drink your water. When you're kind of, I see all your LinkedIn content, which is really, you obviously put a lot of focus into it and it's great. I learned so much from, even if it's like the microviews, I ended up buying those mics that you put in the LinkedIn video. So like, number one, I think that's great. You're putting so much focus on that. But number two, when you're kind of reviewing social medias for clients, so like you're looking at what they're doing so far, what are kind of maybe like a couple of the most common things you're seeing brands doing wrong right now? Like what areas when you go in, are you going, I don't know, whatever it is, where they go, oh, we don't really do any of the TikTok or any stuff like that. Like how often are you see like dealing with that and kind of having to explain where, you know, we should be putting our emphasis?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think there's a couple of things to touch on. One is like, why would someone be interested in short form content or buying that kind of thing? And then also with their current content that they're making, you know, what are some of the things that they could easily fix that's low hanging fruit that could improve either the return on the ad spend on the paid ads or just getting them more viewership? The first piece is a lot of the time businesses, they, you know, they get to a point where they're selling their product that they're doing a lot of the marketing in-house and it becomes like untenable. Like the person who's doing the marketing, who's like publishing, maybe they're jumping into many different aspects of the business and they can't do stuff consistently.
Yeah. They're also doing the email marketing. They're also doing affiliate marketing, you know, maybe strategic stuff. It's similar to what I was doing in Bloomon at the start, but there isn't really, you're seeing it more now, one person designated social media, whatever that is, like you're in charge of that because it's such a huge job now, I guess.
Yeah. And for a platform, say, for example, like TikTok, they may be comfortable with certain platforms, but they might come to a certain one that they could see that they can grow a following there or grow a viewership, but they just don't have the skills to like tackle that platform, or it feels like pretty uncomfortable for them to do it. Like people generally associate TikTok with like kids that they don't understand trends, et cetera. So there's like a barrier in a business owner's mind. Cause like, remember most business owners, they're going to be, you know, very least mid-20s, a lot of them 30s, 40s, 50s.
Maybe their kids are using TikTok and they're like, why on earth am I going to advertise my whatever garden tool business on fucking TikTok?
Yeah, you know, or like why, you know, how is someone going to buy on that platform? Or like, you know, my Meta or Instagram ads are doing better. Why would I spend some time there? So like generally speaking, people would end up working with us on the TikTok front because they're like, okay, we want to get in front of a Gen Z audience. So like younger people is an audience for us. Two, we feel a bit old digitally speaking if we don't have some form of presence there. Or the other aspect is they've actually tried video before, but it hasn't really given them, they've seen the odd video do really well, but they haven't seen like a consistency of it, you know? And some of the biggest, like the easiest things that we normally fix with businesses is that their hooks are wrong in their videos. So like they have nothing attention grabbing at the beginning of the video to get people to either engage or stay. They don't have people in their videos. They aren't captioning it correctly. They're not using trending sounds. They're not like using movement to keep the viewer engaged. And probably the biggest overarching thing is they're, I know this is really cliche now, but they're not delivering any form of value to the customer. They're just trying to sell whatever they're trying to sell. And particularly now with the fact that we have so much content that we can consume between podcasts, short form, you know, be that YouTube shorts, TikTok, Instagram reels, et cetera. And our attention is so divided. You need to be a value first driven business to get someone to want to go to where you want them to go.
100%.
And I think old school marketing was like, talk about the benefits of the product and tell people where to buy. And now it's sort of the opposite, is that the easiest way for you to get better return on your ad spend is to have a very good organic following.
Almost don't sell it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Interesting.
The paid ads can, you can sell in the paid ads, yeah, but your organic feed, subjectively my opinion, is that it should be like either entertaining, or this sort of goes back to what Gary Vee says, entertaining or educational, and you do your selling in the paid, because the paid can be an always on solution where someone can see consistently, and you can focus them based on, okay, I'm going to run this ad for a week because we have this sale going for this week long period. It's a lot easier to track the ROI. And I think the overall thing that people miss with like organic is like creativity is like a real thing. Like a lot of people have like an attitude of like, we just got to copy the best practices from like another business. Mm. I definitely think you can take inspiration from it. And sometimes a business in your niche will do a trend that you're like, oh, we could do our own trend as well. But you need to believe in like a bit of magic as well. You need to believe that like you can come up with something interesting and new that people will like. And that means coming from a place of like creation rather than being a copycat, you know?
Like for me, that, and so many things stick out, but something that I've gotten hooked on now. Do you see all the watch content going on, like Vucum and those guys who do like watch negotiations? Just to be like if you're sitting there as a watch dealer, you go like, maybe we should just put these like haggles on camera, like these back and forths. Maybe people find that interesting. And now it seems like over the last years, that's just exploded. Like I know people like Moses the jeweler. Like I know these names just because I see this. Look, come here, man, let me show you this. 65 Gs, it's yours, Mazal. And like, it's crazy that like, that's the best example of, I'd say their business has exploded just from, let's just put the camera on just for this little exchange. No other business does business like that, where you're just throwing numbers back and forth. And it's just like something like that is exactly what you said, finding the unique element. That's something, and that's also so repeatable, that happens 40 times a day. And they go, hey, let me just put the camera up. And they have an endless amount of content. So I think like stuff like that, like I just had a, I had a client who was a butcher, and he now does breakdowns on everything that's in his fridge and freezer. And he does it himself now. He doesn't have someone coming in to do it. His videos are doing amazing. He just goes, we just cut this beautiful T-bone here, and they talk about the process of it. So it's finding that little unique element, I think, is great. And you also spoke on your LinkedIn, which I loved, about like creating an atmosphere on the floor and like getting people more comfortable doing content. Like I've been on shoots before where it's like a graveyard, and you go in and the guy's like, what do you want me to say? Like, creating that atmosphere and making people feel more relaxed 100% comes across in the content. And have you, is that something you like to instill like as soon as you get in there, and like even if it's just with you and your coworkers, just try and have a bit of crack with them on the way in?
Yeah. Like I wrote that LinkedIn post because like the other day I was speaking with a customer and they were saying, oh, we're working with someone and you know, people aren't really coming across well on camera. And there is like, I find like this reciprocated thing that if you enjoy working with the person, that like sort of, not to get all vibey, but like that energy comes out on camera, you know? So it's sort of important to, yeah, have a laugh with people. I think as well, you need to listen and hear, like talk to the person and understand what makes them click. So you need to develop a bit of rapport and understand like, maybe this person isn't so show and telly. Maybe they're a bit more like introverted. Is there something that they can talk about that they find genuinely interesting? And then there is some tactical things like, do they look slightly off camera? Can you get them smiling beforehand? I often ask people to break into a smile like as they start to speak, because it like elevates their face. And you create, like this would have been back from choir days, you create more resonance in your cheeks, because you're like, you have cheekbones that when you speak, you can like amplify your voice a lot.
It's
more
like more room in your mouth almost to create more, I guess, yeah, noise.
Yeah, exactly. And like talking to camera is a different skill to talking to someone in real life. So if we were beside each other, you know, in a small setting, I can like whisper to you and you can still hear what I'm saying. But on camera, it's more performative and you're speaking to someone through a phone. So I think the job of like the director or the producer is to not only make the person feel comfortable, but to have a feel for how is this going to come across. I'm predominantly social media. How is it going to come across on a phone screen? Is this going to resonate with people? Like, are they in the middle of the frame? Have we lit them in such a way that I feel like this is going to pop off when it comes through on someone's For You page? So yeah, I think the soft skills are like really underrated when it comes to, I think, business in general. Like, I think, you know, being positive, having a laugh, are sometimes, I think, old school business, people would sort of shit on that stuff and be like, oh, you got to be serious. I sort of think of it the other way around, because if you're stressed, thinking about something more or stressing more is not going to help the situation. Having a gap where you can have a laugh or a sense of humor can give the space for you to figure out how to solve that problem. And if someone's stressed on camera, like, it's sort of the only way to do it is to have a laugh.
And it comes across 100%. If you feel like, you can see people who feel like they've been a little bit forced into it. I just had a shoot on with a gym, and a couple of the coaches was like that. And we were like, and then just one like 55-year-old coach, like the older woman, came on, and she just, there was no, I don't know what it was, no nerves, I guess. And she gave us the bet. We used 95% of her interview. So it's just interesting, like, just the atmosphere that you bring to it can make such a difference. And we're nearly at the end of the first half, but I want to ask you, I saw you were in the process of looking for another videographer for Fearless. What kind of things are you looking for in a person when they're applying? Like, is it very much portfolio focused, or is it like, is a big part of you meeting them as well and seeing how they'd interact with clients? Like, what are the big things you're looking for?
That's a great question. Yeah. So with hiring, I've definitely made wrong decisions in the past, and this like round of hiring, I've approached it very differently to vet for like the right person. So I think the first thing is we're putting stuff up on Indeed and LinkedIn Jobs. And the very first screening is that there is a question in it that says, like, in 100 words or less, tell me why you want to apply for this role. So I don't know if this is interesting for people, but like, a lot of people don't even read an application. So if they didn't fill out that question, they get like an automatic rejection. The second one that would get an automatic rejection is if they have no relevant work experience for the role. So the job description is pretty specific about like what we need. So if they've shown like that they're like a sales assistant, or like that they've worked on a shop floor or something, but they haven't shown me like any previous work history, that solves an immediate no as well. So if they pass those two, then it's okay, what does their showreel look like? And have they shown me that they can do short form and like long form when they're recording? It's a bonus if they have equipment, because it means that that's something less that we have to like invest in. So once they get through those things, they get put onto like a review list, if that makes sense. And then from there, I'm asking them to send me some of the best work that they've done. So the videographer for me is a role where like I really need to enjoy working with them. Yeah. And that's two things. One is I need to like what they produce, you know. Once I'm happy with that from what they've shown me, then I'm going on a Zoom call and vetting out like what they're like.
Could I be in a car for 8 hours with this guy?
Exactly. Girl, you know? Exactly. Yeah. Now, what I would have done wrong previously was like just felt vibes off a call. Yeah. What I've changed with this one is going back to what they do in corporate businesses all the time is like competency-based questions and then behavioral questions. So competency in terms of, if we're doing a corporate shoot, how would you set up the camera and the lighting? Talk to me about the differences between S-Log 3 and Cine 4. What would you do if we're outside filming an interview and there's wind and we have a lapel mic? So if they answer,
I wouldn't know any of those.
If they answer any of the questions like incorrectly, I don't move on to the next set of questions. If they answer them all correctly, and a few of them, there's a bit of areas of gray, you know, like they say, if you had a dead cat on a microphone, that's fine. If they say, I'd actually put it under the shirt with a bit of sticky tape, that's also fine. You know, for example, if a client is, you know, wants to look into the visuals of the shots a lot more, what piece of equipment would you hire so that they could have a better visibility over what you're shooting? It would be an external monitor. So I'm just vetting for the fact that these people have actually done things before, you know. Then I just move on to behavioral questions, which is, have you ever had a scenario where you've had to go above and beyond your job description? What would you do? Tell me about a project where you've pushed your creative boundaries. Tell me about a hobby that you have outside of work. Those I'm looking at, have they had situations before? How would they deal with them? Do they have something outside of work that's not just work? So that do they have any other passions? From there, I'm booking lads on trial shoots. So this is like this, I'm not calling it a funnel, but it's like, from this role, there was about 300 applicants. There was about 200 rejections, automatic rejections.
Yeah.
About 50 people were waitlisted. And so far, there's been 6 people on calls, and I've booked 2 lads for trial shoots. So I'm only looking for one person, like one right person. And other than that, man, I'm very upfront with them about what the business is and what it's not. Mm. So like, this role is working very heavily with me. And we're not a big business, so like, you can't expect 100K a year with, you know, the role that it is. But if you want to be part of like a growing team, I want to grow to an internal team of 4 by like probably middle of next year or something.
Do you find a lot of people knew you? Did you find anyone had been like, I watched your stuff in the past, or I'd seen anything you've been doing?
So like, when No, is the short answer. A couple of people, but like, you know, when you put stuff up on job boards, it's a different kind of person. You know, when I put something out on LinkedIn, I got a couple of messages, but it's a pretty specific role. Like, the other roles for this year is going to be like an editor and a project manager. The project manager, I feel like there probably will be more people within my network who will be interested in that role. A lot of the good videographers as well work freelance. So it's a particular kind of videographer here who would want like a full-time role.
Do you find that you need someone, or, you know, you don't want someone that's too far ahead on their freelancing side that they can't give you 100% in years? You spoke about wanting someone to build with the brand. Do you find that the guys that are applying might be a little bit younger, like just out of college and have a passion for it? Like, it's hard to find, you know, someone with a really great portfolio but doesn't have enough consistent work to sustain themselves and is looking for a full-time role. So you're kind of in that, you're looking for that sweet spot of an age. Do you find that the people that are being successful are a little bit younger, or do you have guys that are, you know, 35, 40 plus?
Yeah, the people who I've booked for the interviews are all like in their late 20s or early 30s. Yeah. And I was debating, like, when you're getting applicants for a role, part of the leads that you get in is how you title it. So I didn't want to get a bunch of college students, not that I have anything against them, but for this role, like, it needs someone who has more experience. So I didn't call it junior videography position for a reason. I actually probably should have called it senior videography position. I just called it videographer and content creator. So as a result, the applicants I got in were probably like 70% videographers, 30% social media managers who do a bit of content creation, you know? So yeah, that was sort of the people that I got in, and I can't remember what I was saying earlier. What was I saying? I can't remember.
We'll let that dead air just live. I love the silence on it. Question I ask a lot of my guests, just gives me a better idea of you in business in general. What do you think one of your biggest strengths is in business? Like, what do you think you excel at?
That's a great question. Yeah, I think I'm a very positive person, and I'm quite a good people person. I think that's definitely my biggest strength. I'm also very customer focused, and I'm quite empathetic. So I listen to people quite a lot to understand what they need. And I'm very creative naturally. So like a lot of the key accounts, well, all the key accounts I have creative oversight over. And I'm pretty good at coming up with like creative concepts that I feel like are going to work for that business. I think that's one of the things I hate the most about like stuff that I don't want Fearless to do is I don't want someone to come to us as like, you're just a commoditized service that supplies people with videos. I want customers to feel like, oh, they actually put creative oversight and attention into our business. Mm-hmm. And they actually like give a shit enough to come up with something that's interesting.
It's not just a cookie cutter, like copy and paste kind of system that you have in place. You
exactly.
Know?
Yeah. And like, I believe any business can be interesting. It's just how it's framed. So if someone has said like, oh, we're in a boring industry, they're probably looking at it through the wrong lens, and no pun intended. So I think creative ideas can come out of anywhere, you know, and creativity in general is just like an abundant overflowing thing that we can tap into it like at any point in time.
For sure. And I think that I genuinely think there's any industry now if you got an inquiry for. I really don't think there's any industry you couldn't find a unique skew to put on their content. I really, at this point now, maybe 10 years ago when it was just TV ads and you're like, there's nothing sexy about whatever, an architecture firm. But now between the architects themselves, some of the work they've done and what you can do like creatively with that, even like little things about like, we're here on the first day of a build. Today we focus on whatever people as they're going in to buy a new house. Like, these are things that would be relevant to me that I'd watch. So do you feel like this next 10 years, you're kind of, this could be a bit of a, I don't want to say gold mine, but like a really good industry to be in as every business now sees the value in content, you know?
Yeah, next 10 years, I've no idea, but I do think in general, people are trending more towards like internet first. A lot of people need content. A lot of people are seeing that a lot of the traditional advertising methods are getting like quite overpriced. Whereas I still think like social media in general for what you can spend on other things, like a TV commercial might be like $50,000 on production, so to make the thing. And then for the actual placement of it could be another $50,000. And then you might have to pay $20,000 to like a media planner to even place the things.
And then you've no control over the eyes. Do you know what I mean? At the end of the day, there's still that hopefully enough people watch to justify the spend, you know?
Yeah. Whereas like with social media, you could spend, well, like with a good agency, you could get a content shoot done for, I don't know, like for $4,000 or $5,000, you could get a lot of things done. Like you could get some very nice pictures, some nice videos. You can have stuff for organic and you can run it as always on paid, which is coming up on people's phones.
And then hopefully with you as well, they're learning, if they're smart, they're taking everything you're telling them. And they're like, it's interesting. This is one of the things I want to ask you. Like, do you feel like you want to almost come in, do your first, whatever it is, 2-3 shoots with them and then give them enough to be able to almost make their own content going forward? Like, is your goal to be with them forever, or is your goal to go business to business, give them the tools to build it, teach them what they need to learn, and they're almost self-sufficient, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I wouldn't really mind either, you know? But the reality is they normally end up staying with us because to get that person, like if you think of it from the business's perspective, they would have to hire a creative in-house, and that creative would have to run everything that we're doing. So they would have to ideate, shoot, edit, potentially be in several places.
Come up with concepts, everything.
Exactly. And that's sort of a lot to think of for one person. Whereas like, it'd be pretty common to get a good videographer, but they're just good at shooting. They might not even edit. They may be able to ideate, or maybe they can shoot and edit, but they can't ideate. Mm. So that's why like working with an agency can make a lot of sense for a business, because they're paying someone, like if they're paying a retainer of like $3,000 or $4,000 a month, that's sort of the same as if they were getting someone in-house.
And you're getting much more bang for your buck, most likely.
Yeah. And then like an agency is pulling from all the different industries that they're working in, so their focus is constantly in there. Yes, you can argue, oh, the agency is only giving you like a fraction of their attention, which is just how the agency business works. But generally speaking, like the longest client we've had is like 4 years, like been on retainer for 4 years. Like there's very few clients that we've worked with that have actually left, because they just see enough of the, and I when I mean the value, I don't mean like in a bullshitty way, like they see the value.
Yeah.
It's just like, if you're running a business and
so something's working and going successfully, you'd be like, we should probably continue to pursue this. It's going well.
But if you want to spend money on marketing, you're already spending money on marketing. You're probably spending it on the radio or whatever. We're just part of your mix and we're helping you look like youthful and energetic on social.
It's much more trackable for them versus a radio ad or something like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? On social, like one of the nice things about social is you can come back with, especially on TikTok now, like very detailed analytics of what's working, what's not working, what's driving, what's not. So, yeah, I think with that, with social, it's very easy to justify the, you know, the value you're bringing. I want to kind of go a little bit more into Cornered and the story with that. But just before we do that, do you find that you have a healthy work-life balance right now? Do you feel like you are able to park your work and enjoy other elements of your life? Or do you feel like you're a little, with a lot of entrepreneurs I have on this, they find a struggle to broaden their horizons into other elements, you know?
Yeah, like I just love work, you know? I don't really see a big separation between work and play. Like I guess work is my play and play is my work kind of thing. Like in terms of a work week, I would work a bit every day, you know, like even weekends I'll do 2 or 3 hours. But yeah, I just wake up and I want to work, really, to the point where, I don't know, some of my friends would be like, oh, like, why do you want to work so much? I just like doing it, you know? Mm. So,
is that where the white collar MMA thing kind of came from, just as a new way to test yourself or a new experience for yourself?
Yeah, the MMA fight was, so I did an MMA fight in 2022. Mm. And like the reason why I took that on was I was sort of having like a bit of a struggling time personally. I was sort of felt a bit lost, like probably mentally wasn't really where I wanted to be. And I was just doing a bit of gym work at the time. And
this was coming off a period of like great busyness and success as well, with like the TikTok houses and everything from COVID pretty much to that point. You'd probably been on a bit of a roller coaster, and then things start to settle down a bit and you're like, you know, dust starts to settle, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And I sort of came back home and it, you know, it wasn't the same as it was before. And I was trying to figure out like what to do next. And the MMA fight came up, one, as a challenge, and two, it was one of those things that was like, oh, this is incredibly scary. Like I'm naturally quite like an agreeable person, and, you know, I'd never been in a fight growing up kind of thing. And I just thought this would be like an incredibly like brave thing to do for myself, you know? Yeah. And I didn't know anyone who had done like an amateur MMA fight before, except Gary Fox, other than him.
Did Gary Fox do one?
Yeah, he did one of the very first Wim to Warriors in like 2017 or something.
Okay.
So yeah, man, that was like a 6 month journey. So it's now called Alta. It's not called Wim to Warrior. And I did it out in SPG in Charlestown.
That's John Kavanagh. He heads that up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So John Kavanagh is in the Inchicore one.
Yeah.
And this one, Owen Roddy was in the Charlestown one.
Sick.
And yeah, man, it was a great experience. Like basically the long and short of it was, it's like a 5 month, it's like a 20 week thing. You do a session Monday to Friday every hour from like 6 to 7 in the morning. And you touch upon a different aspect of MMA. And the idea is to get you from like someone who has zero experience to someone who can do an amateur fight at the end of it. And they match you up with either someone in your class or someone in the opposite class, which is going on in tandem in like Inchicore. And it's funny, actually, I reconnected with Dylan, who I did my fight with like probably 4 or 5 weeks ago around work and around like TikTok creation and stuff. But I have
some beef with Dylan a little bit. Yeah. This is one of the things I saw in the documentary that people will push hard at the end, 'cause I really want people to watch it. But Dylan comes out, it starts, I had no idea what the level is going to be. I'm a big MMA and boxing fan. So like, come out, throws like a beautiful teep, like to start. I was like, what the fuck is going on? 'Cause like both you come out, you don't know. It could be, you've seen someone's a bit handbaggy at the start, comes out and throws like a teep, hands are high. I was like, what the fuck? And then so at the level, like, do you have any idea? He wasn't in your class. He was in
my class.
So you knew his level going in. Had you like sparred? Like, it's just a crazy to go in at the start and kind of know him a little bit. Like, is it hard for you even in the back to, I don't know, switch that mode? Like, you obviously, that's something that people talk about, is like, how do you go from, you know, the performance aspect of coming out to switch that mindset? Did you find that when you were in there?
Yeah, like I was very nervous beforehand. I was probably middle of the pack fights, you know, and I was matched up with Dylan. Like, you get matched up based on sort of weight and skill. And I was a somewhat similar weight to him. I wasn't the same level of skill, but I was definitely like, I was in very good shape. So I think that was the reason why I got matched up with Dylan, was they obviously don't really know beforehand how you're going to perform. Like, some lads pull performances out the bag, you know? And although I was definitely a bit more timid in the training. Like, I didn't really fully let go. There were moments where I had really good moments. Like, I would be quite strong for my weight, you know? So I think that's why I got matched up. Now, Dylan had he'd done a bit of Muay Thai before.
100%.
Yeah.
You don't throw teeps like that just off the bat. I was like, what's Owen Roddy teaching in here?
He'd been to Thailand, and like, Dylan is a unbelievably good fighter. Like, I thought it was great. Like, when we got matched up, I was like, I wanted a challenge more than like a, you know, an easy fight, you know. There's no such thing as an easy fight. But yeah, essentially, man, like, I got, and it's all on YouTube, people can watch, but it's, the fight only lasted a minute. I barely threw a punch at him. Like, I remember beforehand, you're behind the stage and I was like really nervous, and Dylan went out first and then I went out second. And I did like a bit of a ring walk or whatever.
I saw it, yeah. It was very performative coming out.
Yeah, because I was like, well, fuck it, if I get knocked out here. Because like, there's a very real chance you can get knocked out. In a boxing match, white collar, which I ended up doing later, like, highly unlikely you're going to get knocked out. But in MMA, like, you can, and lads did.
Is it 4 ounce gloves with head guards?
No. It was 10. Okay. It was 10 ounce gloves, no head guards.
No head guards.
No head guards. Yeah, that's an Eddie Hearn quote. Yeah, you can choose to like not have headshots if you want. We did the full shebang.
There's no way. You're like, Dylan, just let's keep it to the body, maybe.
So I run out and do this like running around the ring, and man, all of like Dylan's mates are on one side of the cage, and they're like Dylan even said this to himself, they're coming up at me, they're throwing the finger up. They're like 15 really aggressive lads. I turn to my side of the ring. It's fucking Ben filming. Dara Jordan, Dara Ta, Kevin on the pints, and fucking like Dev and Gary.
You're like, lads, get in there.
I was like, I picked 7 of, not that the lads are soft, but like, they're just my mates, you know? Yeah. And I got like really, really scared. And so anyway, when the fight starts or whatever, I thought it was going to be a little bit less aggressive, but Dylan just came in, and all I remember is he hit me with like a heavy right hand to my temple, and it felt like a hammer had hit my face. And we had never done like, you don't do heavy, heavy
fully
sparring.
Live. Yeah, it's not fully live. Yeah.
Because like beforehand, you're just getting used to, you're learning so much. You
had
know?
You taken a full smack in training?
No.
I like not, nothing like that?
Not a heavy smack.
So that's so hard when you feel that for the first time. Like, I can't fucking imagine. Like.
And man, basically, anyway, he gave me a bit of smack. I ended up on the ground. I like got up. And when you go down, or if someone takes you down in like a takedown or something, it's incredibly tiring to get back up. So I got back up and I thought I could, you know, get something on him. Basically, he got me down again, and then he was doing like ground and pound, and it wasn't really bad, but they cut the fights early if they feel like the other person can't get up. So I lost the fight, and I just started crying afterwards. Yeah.
You see it so often, like just the adrenaline dump, I'd say, of getting out there being like, oh my God, the whole thing, everything just comes out of you at the end. You see it at the highest level of MMA, people are crying after. So it's one of the most, I'd say, adrenaline spiking, and then it's all over very quickly and you have to come back down again. So all of that made total sense to me.
Yeah.
Did it, I love the part of the documentary that's so great is, number one, you lost. And a lot of people at that point would be like, okay, that's not for me. You know what I mean? Even one of your mates said in the build-up to the boxing, which I thought was very interesting, he was like, I don't know if Thomas is going to win. He's like, I don't know if Thomas has the part of him that wants to hurt another person. I think he just generally is just a guy who wants to help and, like, you know, a nice person. I thought that was very honest for someone to say. It's very easy to just be like, oh, he's going to kill him. You know what I mean? I think a real mate would see that and be like, look, I know Thomas very well. He's a fucking great guy. He doesn't want to inflict pain on other people. So what part of you then after that huge dump of, you know, testing yourself and everything is like, I have to go and fight someone else? Like, what part of you is like, I need to go and do it? You just felt incomplete, I guess.
Yeah, like immediately afterwards, I felt very embarrassed, you know, sure. Embarrassed that I'd lost. And, you know, I had put so much effort into the camp and I just didn't really get the results that I wanted. And it didn't really matter that I thought Dylan was quite good. You know, it was just that I felt like I had...
You could have competed better, maybe.
I felt like I could... I sure. definitely felt like I had left some stuff in the tank, you know? So I sort of took a rest for a bit, to be honest. That was like August 22. And I just went back to training, just went back to CrossFit. Just go back and do weight training. I had gotten a few injuries during the MMA camp as well, just because it's very easy to hurt yourself. Like, I sprained my ankle. I'd like sprained my rib and stuff. So... it was good to get back to... Sorry, is that my phone? No, you're good, you're good. Sorry, that's my bad. And basically, man, so the summer of last year, I was like, you know what? I had felt in the back of my head I wanted to do something again, but I didn't want to do MMA. Not just because of the... It wasn't really the scariness. It was that it's so easy to get injured. And when you get injured, you completely lose your momentum. So I decided to do a white-collar fight night instead. And it was a shorter camp, it was only 8 weeks. You're not going to get knocked out. I had a little bit of experience before and I felt like I could treat this one with like the mentality I needed to in terms of like leaving it all on the table. And one of the regrets I had was not documenting the MMA experience. So I spoke with my friend, Michael Fitzpatrick, he's a filmmaker himself. He's done a lot of documentaries before. And we sort of teamed up to do a like documentary on the whole experience. And
beautiful. You did a beautiful job.
Thank you.
Really, really beautiful. That was the first thing I thought. And there was something you said in, I actually wrote goosebumps beside it because I did when I was watching it. You said, I don't feel like I'm cut out for this, but that's why I'm doing it. And I was like, fuck, that's real shit. Like, and like, that's
that
like,
shit's deep.
And like, I haven't heard anyone ever put it like that before, but to openly admit, I don't think this is for me. And the only reason to pursue it is because I'm scared of it. Or I feel like it's something I'm not comfortable doing. Like, that's fucking real shit.
Yeah.
And like,
yeah,
that's in any element of life, that's applicable. Do you know what I mean? So it's sort of an overarching kind of metaphor for the way you should approach your life almost.
Yeah.
I think it's lovely.
Yeah. And it's sort of like the, not to make a business or whatever, but that was definitely the reason why I named my business Fearless Media, was that, that like idea of being fearless in your life, you know? And I want it to be like, I want to be a representation of what I stand for, you know? So to me, that was to go back and to try again, even though I'd lost the first time. And if I lost the second time, to be honest, I probably would have gone back again until I'd won something, you know? Not to get fucked.
Going to power slap. Like.
You just degrade into like, yeah.
Any sort of
rounders. Yeah, or something. But yeah, like, I think I might have ruined that there about what happens in the documentary. But yeah, basically, I went back and did another camp, filmed it with Fitz. if people want to watch it, it's on YouTube now.
I'll link it.
Yeah, I did an in-person screening earlier on this year, and it got like, you know, really good reception. And to be honest, man, like it sort of goes back to the reason why I started making YouTube videos. I just made that piece to make something impactful. You can't quite measure the impact that you can have on someone if you hit them at the right time. And it's not going to help you financially or whatever, but like, that's not the reason why I'm doing it. That to me is what is like ultimate impact, is if you can help other people's lives, you know? And for where I'm at, for like what I've done in my life to date, I would have like a lot of impact with basically like a young guy from Dublin, you know, or a young guy from Ireland. And so I'd hope that anyone who has seen the YouTube videos before, who has sort of seen some of the story and maybe has wondered where I've been the past few years, that they'll look at that piece and they'll get something from it, you know? And like, ultimately, like, it's not about me, you know, although the documentary is about myself. The point is that like, everyone is on their own hero's journey, and everyone has their own challenges that they have to overcome, me included. And when you see someone else taking on a challenge, you can reflect on your own life and be like, that guy looks like me, sounds like me, comes from the same country as me. I have things that I need to deal with, and now I'm going to go off and do them. And like, when I'm in my grave, that's the thing that I'm going to be happiest with, is like the butterfly effect that you've had on the people around you. So like, the YouTube videos, the documentary is one aspect of that. And I just hope to continue to do more like challenging things as I get older.
Fuck yeah, first of all. There's a scene, I won't go too deep into it, but the changing room scene in the boxing. Number one, when that's happening, right? So obviously I won't go too deep into it, but you had like a tough moment during training. What did you decide, I'm going to grab the camera and set that up very quickly when you're feeling that? You know what I mean? It's probably my favorite scene of the doc. So it's, but to be in that mindset, to be like, I'm upset. I'm feeling something right now. I'm overwhelmed. Let me grab the camera. Also the framing. The fact that the framing worked out perfectly and he slots in right beside you. And I was like, this is absolutely, I didn't know if Michael's there, like, or you've just been like, grab that, put that down, and then whatever comes from it. Well, what was the situation with that?
Yeah. So for context, I was doing sparring with my friend David every Friday in Perpetua. And I had just had like, we were ramping up the intensity as time goes on. And this was probably in, you know, a couple of weeks before the fight. So it's sort of like peak sparring, because then you cool it down before the actual match. And we were just having a sparring session, and I just got hit with a few knocks, and I got hit in the nose.
Yeah, so your eyes are going anyway.
Yeah. It's so weird. I don't know if anyone has experienced this before, but I got hit in the middle of the nose and I felt a flush of emotion go through, and I thought back on like three or four scenarios that were like very emotionally jarring moments, like from the past. And I just started bursting out crying, you know, like, and like, I'm good friends with Dave, and I couldn't hold back my emotions. I was like, I just need a minute. So I just took the gloves off and grabbed my phone. And I was aware in the piece, I didn't at this point have any like bottom moments. Yeah, no low. I hadn't gotten injured or anything. And I just started recording and put it in the corner of the dressing room. And I was just sobbing and sobbing and sobbing. And it wasn't planned for David to come in. And he didn't even know the camera was there.
Yeah, that's the best part.
Yeah.
That's the best part.
And David just gave me like some, you know, words of advice. And sort of from that point onwards, like, stuff got a lot better. And it was sort of beautiful that we were able to capture it, you know?
So. Yeah, man, because even he says in it, he very correctly points out, he's like, this is what it is. This is what it's all about, all this stuff. And him saying like, every fighter he knows has gone through this, like just hearing those things from someone like him who looks 46, but is 21 and has the wisest head I've ever seen. But he came in and he didn't come in. He seemed like he knew. Some people come in, it's all hugs and like comforting. And he was like, no, it's not even something that needs to be comforted. This is something that happens. So we're just going to sit here and go through it together. And I think those moments are kind of what you do it for. Like those moments where you experience the thing you were nervous about and you go through and you survive it, man. And he was a great character to have. You had a good mix of guys in there. I loved it.
Yeah.
Another thing that came up, I want to talk to you quickly about the mindset you had pre the MMA fight and pre the boxing fight backstage. Was there a shift in mindset or did you kind of feel the same? Even on the performance side, like I know some of your friends said, I know Thomas loves the performance element, the walkout, the energy, all that. But did you kind of, having the experience of the MMA fight, be like, I need to almost stay at the same level all the way through knowing what's coming?
Yeah, before the MMA fight, I was incredibly nervous and there was so many unknowns with it. Like I didn't know how he was going to come out or what he was going to do. Like, as you said, he started with like a teep. The boxing, I was a lot more focused. I knew what I was doing a lot more. And there's only so much someone can go at you with, you know? Adam, who I fought, was very good as well. Like in the doc versus say the MMA fight, you can't see like, you can't really tell as much how good we are at fighting based on sort of how it was shot. But Adam was a very good fighter in his own right. He had done stuff in Thailand himself. And like, he was definitely quite a difficult matchup for me, you know, so he definitely wasn't an easy fight. And beforehand, I was just very focused, you know. For the actual fight, without trying to give away what happened, like my heart rate was through the roof. Like, and it was 3 2-minute rounds in the boxing. And like, I was very fit going into that. Like I was not only doing the boxing classes, I was doing weights, I was doing extra cardio. Like I was definitely in the best like shape of my life. Mm-hmm. And
didn't matter at all.
No.
Yeah.
I was like, after the first round, I was bollocks. Mm. I could barely breathe.
Just all the adrenaline just pumping through you. Like
exactly.
Your heart's just going, holy shit.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And like when it finished, it was, you know, it was definitely it's the best feeling of my life, bro. Like it was absolutely unbelievable, you know?
And it's also in the nicest way, the fact that you got to go, I won't say that, but it didn't end quickly. You got to, like, there was moments you got to sit back on your chair in between the rounds and be like, I'm doing this. You know what I mean? I'm doing this right now. And you get those. Sometimes if it ends in the first round, it's all just a bit of a blur. You're like, what the fuck just happened? But when you can have a minute to sit there and your coach and be like, all right, here we go. We're in there now, right? Now let's start putting that job. Let's start popping the job out. And I think I can understand how you feel more complete after that. Even if it hadn't gone the way you wanted, to go the full distance and have a scrap and go, Grant, I didn't fucking embarrass myself. I'm very proud of my performance. But to get it, round it all off was amazing.
One thing I will say about the one that I did, and like full disclosure, I'm good friends with Sean and Patty who run Heat and Boxing Academy. That, yeah. But like, it is a very safe way for you to get into fighting. And like, they're very strict on like, this is not the chance for someone to smack the shit out of you. It's for safe, like technical boxing. So like if someone does want to get into doing their first fight in like a safe way, like I'd really recommend it. I don't get commission if someone goes, but it was just great, you know. That's not to knock the UCC stuff at all. I'm just saying, like, I think it's very important, having done two of these fights now, you can get like all excited about that you want to do your first fight. But if you sprain something, break something, or like hurt yourself, it's going to be with you for a while. Yep. So you might as well be in an atmosphere and like a culture where it's a safety first culture. Man, you're still going to get a buzz out of it. Your mates are still going to be there. It's still a fight. It's 100% a fight.
Yeah.
But a fight where like there's absolutely no rules is just like, there's no point, you know, it's not worth the risk. You know?
I do think the big difference between like a UCC and what you did is you didn't do it as a potential way to grow your platforms or grow your audience size. You did it because you wanted to challenge yourself. And I think in UCC, a lot of the guys, you talk to a lot of lads, they don't even really want to do it, but they know the awareness that they're going to get and the eyes and the TikTok growth and stuff. And that's why they do it. Whereas I'd be much more on your end of like, I want to challenge myself and see if I can do it. And if it's, you know, you, as you said, for the MMA one, you didn't really document it. It was just to do it. And you spoke, there's just a couple of things that came up in the doc that I wanted to kind of pick your brain on a little bit. One of them was about you, one of the sections you spoke about being a man and what being a man kind of meant to you, and about how you see like someone being like strong, providing for people, and you've had that from a young age. Like where did that kind of come from? Is that instilled from like your parents, or where did you kind of get the mindset of what a man is supposed to be?
Yeah, I'm not fully sure, man, to be honest. And I think at that time that we were recording that was about a year ago. I think in the media in general, there was a huge amount of what I would call manosphere content. Like, what is a man? you know, what is a good man? What is a toxic man? You know, and for me, like, and I'm just being like very candid here now. I've just always felt like since I was 7 or 8 years old, I was like, I want to grow up and have like a big family, look after my family, have like financial means, like be able to bring people on holidays if we need to, be able to like if someone gets sick or whatever, and to just be like very caring. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I said that in the documentary was like we wanted to get a peek behind the mask of like what are some of the things that I believe in, you know. Mm-hmm. And like I'm not a manosphere person, but I think that, to be honest, is almost controversial to say these days. Like people,
it is. That's a little bit. It's because everything you just said there is totally valid and all great things that I think every guy should want to achieve. They're all great things: being able to provide, be caring, have a big family. They're all great things. But I think there, as you said, there has been a growth in a lot of guys who probably feel a little bit lost and a little bit unsure of where they fit. And then seeing, you know, some of the more toxic side of the masculinity side, they can kind of, you know, they're not where they want to be. These guys are explaining that, you know, you want to be, this is what you need to do. And they kind of find, I don't know, faith in that a little bit. So that's why I thought it was great that you brought it up, not in a toxic way. Like a lot of guys I've spoke to on this are like, have similar things they want to do, but are almost fearful to say it because they're just going to be labeled as, oh, toxic guy or thinks he's class and all that stuff. And in reality, it's not about violence or scaring other people or anything like that. It's about you being proud of what you're doing and being able to provide. And I think that's lovely. I think it was nice that you left it in there.
Yeah. And like, I think probably a lot of traditional values have gotten eroded away the past few years. And I think there's a lot of people who are scared to even say what I said right there, but they like would resonate with it, but they don't want to say it because they're like, I'll get absolutely butchered online, you know? And I think, man, I've gotten to a point, to be honest, where like both in the ring and like in online, like I've gotten slated before, bro. Like, and I've never met someone in person who's given it to my face. I've never, bro. No one has ever come up to me. So like, first of all, who the fuck are these people? Like, where do they live? Are they under rocks or something? And also, like, I listen to some people online that I'm like, he's incredibly, or he or she is incredibly courageous and saying something that I believe in, but like, I won't have the courage to say it, you know? And I sort of getting to a point now where it's like, fuck it, man, people are not going to like me anyway. There's a bunch of people who think I'm a fucking idiot, you know? And they'll always will be. Mm. But do I want to, and this is like a dialogue I have with myself, and maybe it's helpful for someone listening, is like, do I actually want to cater for the 95% of people who think I'm an idiot? Or do I want to cater for the 5% who absolutely love me? Because my best mates are people who love me for all my weirdness and I love them for all their weirdness. Or like, you know, anyone I've ever gone out with, yeah, but I'm not interesting for many different girls for whatever reasons. But like these girls particularly were into me as a person. So what am I going to do? Like suppress my personality for my whole life and go to the grave knowing that no one ever knew the real Tom. Mm. Like it's an incredulous way to live. And it's just bolstered by these thousands, if not millions of people who just sit at home writing incredibly mean things about people that they don't know, that they see 15-second snippets of online, that they think, I'm just going to shit on that person. But like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, would you have the balls to actually even just send me a, I don't even get a text on Instagram for someone. Like, I remember in particular, that podcast that I used to do, there was, I said something really silly. It wasn't the longitude buy a ticket thing. It was something else.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. There was like a meme that was created.
Yeah.
Like that was one.
There with
was,
Rob Zijan.
Yeah. Rob Zijan.
Good guy,
yeah.
Good guy.
And like, that was like a funny one. I thought that was so funny. But there was something else I said that was like really silly in a podcast before. And I didn't even get someone texting me on Instagram asking me like, why did you say that? Or I'm trying to understand where your opinion's
just
coming
fuck
from.
This guy.
Yeah. You know, and it's like if they're paying that little attention to you, like the real people listen to the long form stuff. The real people like have enough of an attention span to actually ask you what the hell is going on. And like I've always been, I don't really judge people by their clips. I judge people by like, if I'm willing to listen to their long form, I'll get to know who they are. Yep. And the flip side, if I see someone's clip and I don't like them, but I'm not willing to listen to the long form, then I won't have a judgment on them. I won't give an opinion on it, because it's like, I don't like him from the clips, but I'm not going to judge him, because if I listen to him on an hour long podcast, I'm sure I'd get a grip of like who he actually is, you know? And there are people on the other side where they have good front facing stuff, but like, if you ask people about what they're like in real life, people have a different opinion. They're like, ah, he's actually not that nice. Or like, he did this to me, yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. And like, come up to me in real life, bro.
Yeah.
I'm not. No,
man's got hands. So any of that, you get the, but like, it's great. And like, it's similar along everyone I've had on the podcast. They all say the same stuff of like, even Jay, for answer, like Jay would got some grief to start. Who do you think you are? Casey Neistat. But then he runs out. He was coming in and three kids ran up to him and be like, man, I love your videos. So even in that, like just quit. I've met him for the first 10 seconds. I'm able to be like, yeah, like even that those kids must have been 10 or 11. And they're like, oh my God, Jay Kavanaugh's here. So who are you going to listen to? The kids who are like, who have the confidence. I don't know who I would have been like Wayne Rooney or a footballer that I would have run up to be like, Jesus Christ, I can't believe you're here. Or I remember Joe Delaney came to Dublin once and I was like, oh my God, I saw him in Dundrum. I was like, Joe Delaney. So like, are those the moments you want to go for? Or the fucking user 911-644 being like, this guy's a prick. So no, man, and like, as you said, if you want to impact one person, like that's, it did it for me, especially. Did you enjoy the longer form? Like as a concept, you do a lot of social stuff. And this is my last question.
Okay.
The social stuff that you do is obviously much, you're making maybe in the same week and the focus is just getting that out. Documentary, very long form, multiple edits probably, and like more shooting, more extra bits. Do you enjoy that as much as the social? Did you find enjoyment in the longer form piece?
Yeah, like I love longer form. Yeah, I'd love to get back into it. I think
it's hard to find the projects. Do you know what I mean? To kind of be the thing you're going to invest in, you know, especially at the start.
Yeah, like look, podcasts are good long form, and they're like relatively easier to do. So, like, I think moving forward, I do want to get back into YouTube, even if it means like no one's watching. And I say that candidly because I haven't posted on YouTube in like 3 years and the platforms have changed and maybe my stuff isn't good enough anymore for people to listen to. I don't know the answer to that question. But, you know, one way of getting back into it is getting into those 8 to 10 minute videos. Another element of it is taking on more documentary projects that I think are interesting and meaningful and like impactful. And there is a degree of like, you know, I'm trying to think of a, shallowness with short form. Like it's very short, it's funny, it's just interesting, you know. Is it really impacting someone in a meaningful way? Short form, or long form can have this thing, like I look back on some long form.
When I look back on some of the long porn that I've watched.
It has really impacted my life.
Sometimes just the short stuff, it just doesn't do, but the longer form porn. The 4 to 5 hour porns.
That's a real Freudian slip, isn't it?
I'm going to open with that.
The long form stuff can, you can create pieces. Like people create albums, like really great YouTube videos, documentaries that can be the pivotal moment in changing someone's life. And that doesn't happen off of TikTok. Most of the time. So like, if you're a human viewing your life through this lens of how many people can I help? Like, do you want to have 1,000 TikToks to get someone to do something? Or could you have like an incredible 20 minute piece that gets someone to genuinely change what they're doing? And I say that because I have had things that I've consumed before that have altered how I've gone about living my life. And
do you want to give me one?
Yeah, well, like Alex Mars, Mars Bar Vlogs.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, he was the guy who got me to start making YouTube videos. Because again, it was that thing of like, we were the same age. So like 19 years old in the UK doing exactly what I want to do. I'm just going to start doing that. Or the MMA thing was, I actually listened to a John Kavanaugh podcast about the program. And that's what got me into doing that. Or like the Cole Buxton documentary was definitely a heavy inspiration behind turning the MMA or the boxing thing into a documentary, you know? Those are all things. And there's also people as well. Like obviously Gary Vee had a big impact in like even starting my own business. Like I remember, and it's funny how you completely forget different moments of your life, but the summer of 2015, before I went into college in DCU, I'm pretty sure I watched like all of the Ask Gary Vee episodes. I was like, this crazy guy run an advertising agency over in America. he's constantly talking about content or whatever. That was one of the heavy inspirations to start the YouTube channel. So like, you forget the people who inspired you, but their impact lives on
in what you're doing.
In like, you could argue like Gary Vee fundamentally changed my life. And I even go back to when I was a kid, like Phil Conway, who was doing athletics, was teaching me athletics when I was like 14, 15, 16, like embedding the confidence in me to be like, no, you're going to go, you know, you're going to do this and you're going to do that. Calling me a young man instead of a boy, sending me, you know, pieces of information. I was used to do the triple jump, how I could get better at the triple jump. My form tutor, Phil Hogan, who constantly was affirming, you know, that I could do debating. My French teacher constantly treating me like an adult, you know. And these are all core things that like, they change your life. Like I won the Leinster Debating Championships. I came third in Ireland in the triple jump. All the achievements I got in secondary school gave me the confidence to be the Thomas to start the YouTube channel. And everything in your life is a building block around you. So that's sort of what I constantly say to my close group of mates now is like, it's incredibly important we spread good energy. It's incredibly important that we do difficult things together. It's incredibly important that we have a vision for what we want to do in our life. And it's incredibly important to believe fundamentally that each one of us as a human being can have an incredible impact on the people around us. And you've no idea of the beauty and positivity you can create if you focus on how you can help the world. From saying hi to someone in a coffee shop who no one fucking says hi to them all day, to walking into your gym and just providing a good bit of energy, to having the empathy to listen to a friend when they're going through a difficult time, to have the courage to step into a ring and make a video around it, knowing that even if only 400 fucking people watch that on my YouTube channel, that if 20 of them take something from it, that it can be incredibly impactful into their life. And ultimately to having the ownership to feel like and to know and believe that your human life has there's an incredible amount of things you can do on earth, and to like to believe that to the fullest extent that you can, you know. Fucking hell, where'd that come from?
Take a deep breath, gentlemen. And like, even as you said there, like if that impacted 20 people, it doesn't seem like a lot, but if those 20 people were in this room now and they're all saying, Jesus, like 20 of them say, you changed my life. And I went on, I had no confidence. And then I got into, you know, Wimp to Warrior. I won my first fight. I'm now continuing to do MMA. Gave me the confidence to go and chase a job that I wanted. And I grew all those things, like an unending amount of benefits. You're talking about your form tutor and your French teacher 10, 15 years ago that instilled even like hard work. When you work hard at something and dedicate yourself to something, you will see results from that, whether that's whatever you've done. And that's instilled in your life and you've continued to do it. So I'm sure, hopefully they see that and they can be like, Jesus Christ. Because I've had teachers like that as well, who I was like, especially I wasn't the best student, but a lot of them could see you have a great, like there's an energy about you. Take up the oxygen in the room when you're in there. There's something to that. Maybe it's not, you know, studying business in school, but there's something to that and don't ever lose that. And I actually recently got asked to come back into my school to talk to the fourth year design class, like video class. And I was like, fuck man, I remember being in that class and people came in to do that. And you'd be like, man, that's fucking insane. So I'm not even going to say anymore. What you said there is perfect. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for taking the time.
Delighted to be here.
Thomas Arnold. The documentary will be linked down below. I'll put the link in. Go enjoy it. And yeah, I owe you one. Thank you for coming on.
No problem, bro. Thanks so much.
Unreal.